Brethren, there's a program on cable television entitled How It's Made. In each episode of this program, they take the viewers through a number of video clips showing how popular items are manufactured. And I've seen episodes on blue jeans, cowboy hats, combination locks, turbans, number two pencils, and things such as that. I enjoy the program. I find it thought-provoking as the producers try to break down what it appears to be a rather complex product that we may never have considered how all the pieces have to come together, and they show all the individual stages that go up to and create an end product, again, out of the parts and pieces, and explain it as succinctly as they can in a half an hour. I'll come back to that thought in a moment of how it's made. I've been working on a project at our home lately, and what I'm trying to do is actually prevent or slow down the elements from eroding the side yard at our house. On the side yard at our house and perched on the edge of the cliff, many of you I know have been there recently for the picnic, is a hard maple tree about this big around. And as the creek has come down and taken more and more and more of that bank, that tree that used to stand up like this, the root system has dropped over the edge as it has been eroded. And as I looked at it last week from the bottom and looked up, I realized that it's continuing to erode, and I've got a little bit of a cave up under the grass that is our lawn. And so what I've been thinking about is how I can create a barrier to slow down and reinforce and rebuild that bank. And so on the other side of our property, there's a smaller creek, and I think when they were clearing for our home, they ran into some rather large, you know, rocks, anywhere from 200 to 500 pounds maybe, and they pushed them into this small creek on the other side. So I'm thinking I can drag those out of there and I can transplant them down to the larger creek on the other side and create a barrier and, you know, a little bit of rebar and a little bit of concrete and then a second layer of these. I can create a rock wall 5 to 6 foot high that the creek won't bother the rest of that tree. And by reinforcing it, I can slow down the concept of erosion. Well, as I started to work on this plan, as I started to move several of these large rocks, and Alexa and Nick were helping me, we'd put the toe strap around it, and I put them up on the yard on the quad, and they manned the winch as I tried to guide this thing up some planks, and we managed to get 3 or 4 of the smaller ones up in the yard. But as I started to do this, I had the opportunity to toil on this project, and as I did that, I had the wonderful opportunity to dwell on God's handiwork and consider the world and how it's made. You know, I sat there looking at these large boulders, and then I watched higher upstream the smaller rocks down to the gravel and down to the sand. And I considered the process of erosion and the indomitable power, the unstoppable power of water over time. On the edge of this little creek, I looked at very mature trees that over time have had all the dirt washed away from under their root systems, and yet they cling tenaciously to what's left of the bank there. And I'm hoping through the work I do that this big fella on the other side of my house will do the same. I considered, as I stood there in the shade of this little creek, I considered the parched lawn that was just a few feet away from me while I stood in moisture-drenched moss and all that type of thing in this little creek with the trees and the shade and that type of thing. And I recognized just how delicate that survival tipping point is on this amazing planet on which we live. And it got me to thinking about God's wonders of creation and how this mixed up world so often rejects, either outright or to some in-between degree, God as our creator and as the almighty supreme being that put everything together. Some of those people do that by ignorance. You know, they don't know any better, and so they've come to worship things, and we can read back to the example of the Israelites and the Egyptians and the many different gods they had and how Moses took them through and embarrassed each one of them, showing that they didn't really have the power that they thought they did. Other people down through time have worshipped things out of fear, like volcanoes, and so they worship them or they make gifts to them in the hopes of being forgiven or protected from events that they don't understand. Still others, being deceived by Satan into thinking they have all the answers, seek to concoct their own theories about how this amazing creation came into existence and maintains itself still today. Many of our scientists and scholars don't want to admit the fact that there is this supreme being out there, because if they did, their own self-pride would have to take a back seat to the fact that there is this supreme creator. And then they'd have to ask themselves the next question about, well, why is it then that we're here? And what is it that that creator would want me to do with my life, instead of feeling all proud and sanctimonious? We know that God doesn't approve of such behavior. If we turn to Romans chapter 1 and verse 18, we can read what he says about those that have turned his law and his truth and his instructions on its ear. Romans chapter 1 and verse 18. Romans chapter 1, beginning in verse 18 and reading down through 25, it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and wickedness of men, who by their wickedness suppress the truth." God has set His truth out. He tells us that it will make us free, and yet we know that mankind, through Satan the devil, has turned it on its ear. Verse 19, "For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it for them." We're going to continue on that thought and recognize how it is that God has made things so plain. Verse 20, "Ever since the creation of the world, His invisible nature, namely His eternal power and deity, has been clearly perceived in the things that have been made, so that they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks to Him, but they became futile in their thinking and their senseless minds were darkened." They didn't want to give credit where credit is due. Verse 22, "Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man or birds or animals or reptiles." And again, we saw the many gods that people set up in their hopes of living a promising life instead of the one true God. "Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." Brethren, the Bible, which we accept as the divinely inspired word or account from God, says that in the beginning God created. And today, brethren, I'd like to cover the topic of God, our Creator, and approach the subject as seen through some of the attributes of His creation. How did it happen? How did it get here? And equally important, how did it come to be in its current form? How is it that we see such order and balance out of chaos? It would seem to me, brethren, that the logical place to begin in making the argument for God as our Creator is simply that creation requires one. Creation requires a Creator. We know that we can't see God, we can't touch God, we can't reach out and touch His garments or sit down and have tea and ask the questions that we might like to. But we see the brilliant complexity and beauty of what God has made and provided for our sustenance and our enjoyment. And we can appreciate and understand Him by His handiwork, because creation itself shows the hand of God. Let's turn to the account of one of God's most beloved servants and get some straight talk about how we should relate to God, our Creator, and how there should be no question in our minds. Turn to Job chapter 12. Job chapter 12, and beginning in verse 7. Job chapter 12 and verse 7. He says, "But now ask the beasts, and they will teach you." Sounds a little funny to hear him say that, but as we continue the thought and really understand what he's trying to say, we'll realize that there is a little bit of sarcasm here, but it makes the point when we read it and think about what he's trying to tell us. "But now ask the beasts, and they will teach you, and the birds of the air, and they will tell you. Or speak to the earth, and it will teach you, and the fish of the sea will explain to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In whose hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind." Now, Job hadn't just finished reading Dr. Doolittle. He wasn't asking us literally to go communicate with creation. But he was clearly making the statement that God's handiwork speaks to us if we'll listen. God's handiwork was divine indeed. And even back then, even without all the scientific data to support what they saw and explain what they didn't quite know, it was still amazing to see the nature of God's creation, and it was plain to see that it was only through that wise hand, that master planner, that it came into being. We can look today at all that man has accomplished, and it is a lot, but it pales next to the work of God. We can consider that it takes, to build a bridge, it takes a team, a host of engineers. It takes legions of labor, and it takes gobs of money. But that isn't creation. That's simply the assembly of materials, and all they're really doing is creating a more efficient or maybe a safer way to travel on God's green earth. Mankind sends a craft into space, and it takes all of NASA's resources to get that done. But all they accomplish is to reach a tiny bit further into the heavens. Our greatest artists spend their lives creating what some refer to as masterpieces. But really all they do is copy what God has already created in His glory. You know, some of those finest works, they're simply pictures of a beautiful sunset, or the contour of a human face, or a majestic landscape. They aren't creating, they're copying. They're appreciating what God has already done. Let's turn back to the creation account and take a brief look at the power and perfection of God's handiwork. As we look at the Creator, we see it first and foremost through His creation. Turning to Genesis chapter 1 and beginning in verse 1. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, and it says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light,' and there was light." So as you close your eyes, again, as you consider, you know, if you were a producer, if you were making a movie, if you were trying to create this picture for other people to envision, what would that look like? As we go through the steps of creation here, we know that this stretched out over days, that God didn't snap His fingers, that God didn't flip a switch and it all just dropped in there. It's like opening one of these new cards and something folds up and the music starts. It didn't happen like that. God found joy in creating. McKenna, we call her sometimes Mud Pie, because if there's a mud puddle around, and unless she's in a church dress, she's going to be in it, because she loves to mix and she loves to play and she loves to build. And on the 4th of July, we were all at the beach, and so everybody was doing their best to make sandcastles. And God had that same creative desire to mold this earth and to push the hills up to the side and to put the light and then say, well, the light's not quite enough. I want to put individual stars and moons and day and night, and I want to give these people organization. He had a desire to create. And we can go through here and look at it more. Kind of jumped the gun there. Verse 4, "And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness." So again, how do you do that? You know, we can close a door, and we can have darkness on one side and light on the other. But how is it that God sits there and goes, all right, and stretches light from dark? How does He do that? I look forward to understanding what these words really mean. I'm looking forward to God playing that video for us of creation and seeing it in its full brilliance someday. Verse 5, "God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, 'Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters.' And thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so." Managed not to trip over my tongue there. Wait a minute, there's another firmament coming. Verse 8, "And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. Then God said, 'Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together.'" So now I start to create a light and dark, and I create the heavens, and I push some of this water down, and there's clouds in the heavens. And now that I've got this ball here, now I'm going to start pushing and creating and differentiating down here. So verse 9, "Then God said, 'Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear.' And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters He called seas. And God saw that it was good." His plan, His picture, His end result was beginning to take shape. Let's skip a couple of verses here. I'll come back to them later. Let's jump down to verse 13. It says, so the evening and the morning were the third day. Verse 14, then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven. So he divided light from dark, but now he says, I want to put some specific things there for them. Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let there be lights in the firmament of heaven to give light on the earth, and it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and he made also the stars. God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light unto the earth and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness, and God saw that it was good. And so the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Brethren, here we've looked really only at the first phase, at the initial aspect of God's creation, laying the groundwork, the foundation, if you will. But there's really already so much to consider. In Psalm chapter 8 and verse 3, David wrote, when I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, and there again, that creates a mental picture. If you look at what we do, if I'm going to work with a stone that size, you know, I need heavy equipment. I don't do it with my fingers. And yet we can here grasp the greatness of God when all those amazing things that we just read about, David says, everything that hangs in the skies is the work of your fingers. That's the little work you do. So that gives you the scope of who God is. When all that sits in the heavens is his handiwork, his fingers, his fine work, like a jeweler would work with all those stars and those jewels and hang them in their perfect place. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained. Just as we considered the instruction from Job a moment ago, David looked into the nighttime sky and he was amazed by what he saw, as we still are today when we had that opportunity, and he knew that this panorama was no accident. This was no bump in the night, as so many want to call it, this Big Bang Theory. Consider the apparent randomness of the night sky. But we really know that it isn't. There's nothing random about it. In actuality, there's an infinite organization to all those heavenly bodies. They've been carefully placed in a very complex grid. And if it weren't for the mastermind of God, we would live in fear. We would be simply little pieces in some cosmic pinball game, always worried about whether things were going to get in the way or come together in a collision. They made science fiction films like Armageddon about that, where this planet killer, they call it, of an asteroid. Thank you very much. I knew it was in the notes there somewhere. Was hurtling toward Earth, and it was going to snuff out life as we know it. We referred a moment ago to the book of Psalms. Let's turn to chapter 19 and hear a little bit more about how David saw the heavens that stretched out before him. Actually, I was going to read several verses, but I think for sake of time here, I've got a little bit. Psalm chapter 19 and verse 1, and I'm reading from the modern King James Version. Psalm chapter 19 and verse 1. It says, the heavens declare the glory of God. So there again, we're talking about the creation of God and the fact that the master creator that made all this with infinite wisdom and balance and organization, like Job said, David here says, the heavens declare the glory of God. Without a word, they speak to the incredible power and wisdom that put it together. And the expanse proclaims his handiwork. So without a word, we see in our mind all that we need to see if we have an eye to see and an ear to hear. The work of God's hands, like a skilled craftsman or makes furniture or a fine jeweler would put things together. God did that with each and every component of his creation. David goes on in the following verses, I think it is through verse 6. He goes on to marvel at the daily progression of the sun across the sky. And says, like clockwork, this thing, you know, it rises and it chases across the sky like a chariot. It says, like a bridegroom, you know, bursting forth, excited to come to his wedding. And it makes its rounds day after day in perfect precision. As human beings, we can only begin to fully appreciate God's creation. And with all the power of our most advanced telescopes, year after year, we build bigger and brighter and more powerful. And all they do is document some more stars and recognize just how little we know about how big this universe is and how detailed it is. We live, again, in a rather small existence, and sometimes we need to put things into context that help us to understand. It's been said that the very fastest spaceship that we have at our disposal right now would take roughly 70,000 years to make it to the very nearest star in our galaxy. 70,000 years. And we think we're something, because we can get to the moon and we can send an unmanned probe to Mars. 70,000 years. Man has done some amazing things, such as fly to the nearby planets and assemble the International Space Station so that a few lonely people can survive outside our atmosphere. But with all our attempts and all our technology and all our know-how and all our efforts and all our pride, we haven't yet hung an additional planet or star in the heavens. Man has been utterly unable to master the handiwork of the Master. We've taken some time to consider the initial phase of creation, and I've alluded to the organization with which it's ruled. And that leads me to the next attribute of the creation, because God's creation operates under a specific set of rules and laws of which God is the author. James chapter 4 and verse 12 tells us that there is one lawgiver. God gives us laws, physical laws, to maintain the balance in this creation, and we know that He gave us spiritual laws as well. There are several natural laws that govern the world and the universe around us. All of us know that when we jump up, we come back down, and gravity is one of those laws. Motion is another. Thermodynamics is another. Electromagnetics is another. And all these things talk about the transfer of energy and how light and darkness work and how weight works and how we travel through time and the locomotion and the burning of calories and what it takes us to generate motion ourselves. Without these foundational principles, the universe would be in chaos. But God provides organization and order out of it all. In Jeremiah chapter 33 and verse 25, God says, His covenant is with the day and the night. His agreement, His contract, His understanding is with the day and the night, because they exist out of His pure, He willed them into existence. His covenant is with the day and the night. And He was the one that appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth. Ordinances are the laws. They're the regulations by which we live. If a policeman comes, or if the local zoning guy comes and says, you know what, your house doesn't stack up to a particular ordinance, you need to make an adjustment because it doesn't fit. It doesn't work. It's not acceptable. God was the one that appointed the ordinances of heaven and earth. God created, then He appointed and fixed the laws of heaven and earth that we're very grateful He put in place. Brother, did you know that our earth spins on its axis at more than 1,000 miles an hour? You know, if you take a basketball and you can spin it on your finger, and you try to set something on that basketball, what happens? It's just sent off into space. That centrifugal force just automatically sends it off. And I don't know what the speed of that basketball is. I was going to try to bring one up here, but I was afraid I would break something. It's been a while since I did that. How is it that you and I sit in these chairs or stand here right now and aren't just blown off into space? How is it that the water... You've all seen a dog come out of the pond and shake his head and just, you know, and try to get rid of some of the water. This earth spins at 1,000 miles an hour. How is it that the seas stay put? Or consider that, in addition to that, the earth hurtles through space around the sun in perfect and repetitive motion at 67,000 miles an hour. Now, I had my kids do this on the way to church today, because Nick, he knows how to get Dad started. He goes, Dad, what are you speaking about today? So I started telling him some of this, and I said, guys, roll down your window. How many of you have rolled down the window in the past and put your hand out the window? Somebody else. I had all the kids do that, you know, and I just they just burst into laughter as you put your hand out and boom. And then you tense your muscles and you fight back against and you try to ride and surf the wind and all. You're moving along at 60 miles an hour. The earth moves along at 67,000 miles an hour through space. How is it that this little ball doesn't just disintegrate into dust because of that friction and that momentum, that maelstrom that goes on around our head? We walk through our daily routines blissfully unaffected by the intensity that goes on around this globe. that God created, that He set in motion, and that He put in perfect repetitive balance. That's an amazing thing to consider. And yet so many people want to write it off that it just happened. That space just burped and suddenly everything existed. Sounds ludicrous. At the same time that God created immutable spiritual, or that He created these physical laws, He also created and provided us with immutable spiritual rules that would govern man and his place on this earth. We are identified as God's highest creation. And because we operate on more than simply instinct, because we simply don't just wake up and eat and go back to sleep, we would need more full-bodied, more deep and profound laws by which to operate, greater rules to live by. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37. Matthew 22 and verse 37. We know that we could go through and we could turn to several different scriptures that take us through the commandments and all the different laws that have been put in place and the rules by which we've been instructed to live our lives. But in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37, it says, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And this is the first and great commandment." And so we know that this summarizes actually several of the commandments. But if we live our lives this way, if we walk according to this rule, then our lives will be structured, organized, prioritized, and blessed. Verse 39 goes on to say, "And the second is like unto it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." And so when we interact with, or we pay homage to the Creator, we live in a certain way according to the relationship that we have and we know that we should have. And then as we interact with all the other two-legged beings that walk around on this earth, we recognize that there also needs to be a relationship and appreciationship. Appreciationship, yeah, there. I made a new word today. I created. The relationships that we have with mankind are important, and they're also ruled by law. But this, too, has been something that mankind has been unable to manage, and we know and we pray for and we look forward to the day when that will soon be rectified. We spoke about the initial phase of God's creation at the beginning of the book of Genesis, and we also spoke about the power that God wields to harness the incredible energy of it all, but He didn't stop there. You know, hanging this bauble, hanging this trinket, hanging this wind chime in the heavens was amazing in and of itself. But God went further. And it leads us to the next step in God's amazing process. God created life. God created life. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 3, it says, "By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible." God willed this, and we'll cover that scripture later. God willed this into existence. And He molded it and formed it and shaped it for our benefit and for His pleasure. The Big Bang Theory has been called statistically impossible, and even many of its supporters over the years have had to admit that it's full of holes. Mathematicians claim to have calculated that the chance of life suddenly existing from dead matter, from the lack of life, would be 1 to the 40,000th power. Now, that number is unfathomable to me. It's indescribable in the words that I could try to put it into. And in all the attempts that mankind has made, they have yet to succeed in doing it. Let's turn back to the first chapter of Genesis. We skipped a few verses while we were talking about the first phase, so we'll pick it up in verse 11 here. The story of God creating life. Pick it up in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 11. "Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and the herb that yields its seed according to its kind, and the tree. So God said, let it happen, and it happened. And here it was in verse 12, and God saw that it was good. Let's drop down to verse 20, because we read 13 through 19 when we talked about God's initial phase of creation, hanging the heavens and the earth. Continuing in verse 20, it says, "Then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures." So prior to this, the planets and the stars and the heavens and water and mountains had all been made and put in place, but it was an unfinished model at that point. "Then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good." Again, I look forward to seeing the true documentary of this at some point. "And God blessed them, saying," continuing in verse 22, "God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth. And so the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, let the earth bring forth a living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping things, and every beast of the earth, each according to its kind. And it was so. And so God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth." Some of those things we don't like so much, those creepy things. "According to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, all over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them," blessed us. "And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So again, we get back to this creation and we see that God said, this is my plan, this is what's going to happen. He speaks it, he wills it, and then we see the documentation of it in place. Verse 29, "And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seeds. To you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day." Man has done many amazing things. They've managed to map the DNA sequence. They've cloned a few animals. But like the hanging of a star or a planet in the heavens, they haven't actually been able to bring anything to life. We can say here too that man has been utterly unable to master the handiwork of the Master. There's one last point, brethren, that I would like you to consider. None of us would argue that the process of creation wasn't amazing. But if it had been a one-time universal magic trick, it wouldn't have been the type of product that came from the great God that we have come to know. What if God hadn't planned for the next season or the next generation? Happily, he did, and in his ultimate wisdom, we also see him as the master sustainer of this world. What if God had acted like a child that's given a pet before it understands what that pet requires in the way of being fed and being loved and being cared for and being protected? This earth, left to itself, would have failed and ceased to exist. But our omnipotent God put into motion a plan that would be able to exist in perpetuity, that includes cycles and renewable programs that were built in from the start. Let's look one more time at a specific aspect of the verses that we've already read through in Genesis chapter 1. Consider, if you're still there, verse number 11. "Then God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself." That word yield there, this is where it says yield seed or yields fruit, means to make, to execute or exercise, to bring forth, to follow, or to maintain. So God put in place in His creation a plan that life and death and renewal and seasons would go on. And that all of mankind, through that, would be able to see God. It wasn't just Adam and Eve. Like we said, if it was a one-time trick, Adam and Eve would have seen a beautiful garden, and then after 70 years or 100 years or whatever that lifetime was, it all would have just faded like our gardens do in the fall and been done. But mankind, down through time, has been able to see the plan of God and hear the stories of mankind and read the scriptures of God's servants and the promises of what the future holds for us because of the perpetual nature of the creation. We see this again in later verses. If we turn to verse 21, it says, "So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind." Verse 22, "And God blessed them, saying, Be fruitful and multiply." Again, in the living things, in the animals and the reptiles and all, He created a process whereby life would be renewed. The next generation had been prepared for. God set in motion life and the process by which it could repeat itself. Verse 27, "So God created man in His own image." Now we're going to notice a slight difference here. In His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. Not yet after His kind, not yet in His spiritual form. You know, the rest of them all said that they came in their kind. They were mirror images of. They were replacements of. But mankind, He had greater plans for and a longer process. And so we were created in His image, not yet in His kind. Verse 28, "Then God blessed them," again us, "And God said to them, Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over every living thing that moves on the earth." God's various systems were created to move and to work in coordination, to exist in harmony. Stars and planets and moons to travel in some cosmic dance, and the alignment of each to affect the other. You know, when the planets and the moons and everything lines just right and the gravitational pull creates the tide surge that we have in Earth, and millions and millions and millions of microscopic little animals are brought in to feed other animals and to enrich the world around the edge of the seas. The balance is so intricate that just a tiny degree of error and mankind would either freeze or fry. You know, we sometimes like to think we're so powerful and so great and so smart, and yet the range in which we can live is really pretty limited. You look at what an otter or a seal or a whale can do. They can handle great pressures and great extremes in temperature. Mankind can't. We've managed to help ourselves exist in some pretty tough environments. But with just the smallest variation in the gravitational pull, and our travel around the sun would come to a quick and tragic end as the world careened off into space, instantly incapable of maintaining life. God created order out of chaos and built in systems to maintain that intricate and necessary balance. Brethren, in summary, we all exist, survive, and thrive at our Father's pleasure. Revelation chapter 4 and verse 11, it says, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for You have created all things, and for Your pleasure they are and were created." Again, we survive and thrive daily, sometimes even unaware, unthinking, at the pleasure of our Father. Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16. We started at the beginning of the Bible where it simply said, "In the beginning God created." And here in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16 it says, "For by Him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, things that are visible and invisible." We can't see the wind. We can see the impact of it. And how does it work? Is there some universal fan moving it? No, it's those laws that God created. The hot air and cold air move and move up and over each other and create friction and wind. And they move the clouds and the evaporation, and they bring us rain, and sometimes not enough. But the intricacy of all these organizations that come into play and affect us each and every day and perpetuate life is amazing, whether visible or invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all these rules that affect our lives. All things were created through Him and for Him. Verse 17, and He is before all things, and in Him all things consist. In the beginning, God created. As we meander through life, brethren, the list of things that we can and should be grateful for is endless. When the Regord family prays each night, our children typically start, and then either my wife or I will conclude. And I often include that point in our prayers of how much we have to thank God for. You know, whether it's the grandeur of Mount Rushmore, I talked about those majestic landscapes earlier that so many beautiful pictures are taken of or painted of, whether it's the softness of the scent, softness and scent of a freshly washed pillowcase against your cheek as you lay down after those prayers, and our children do, or it's a scraggly little flower that right now is doing its best to live in our flower gardens where the rain doesn't quite reach under the eaves of the house. God has done amazing things as the master designer of our universe, and we should voice our appreciation at every opportunity. And sometimes when I try to make that point in prayers and I go on and on and on, I take a deep breath and I just rattle off 20 or 30 of them and I'll get done, and generally it's Melina that goes, "Wow, that was a long prayer, Dad." But we could walk along each day. And you know, here's a little challenge for you. And with every step we take, think of another thing that we have to be thankful for. And if we simply keep our eyes open, I see beautiful ties and dresses out there. I see glasses that I can't see you nearly as well without. So mankind, God has given us the wisdom of how to bend glass, to bend the prism of light so that my eyes can see you better. These shoes keep my feet safe and more comfortable. And with every thought, with every step, with every breath, we could think of something that we can be thankful for, and the creation that we have around us and that we're part of. God has done amazing things as the master designer of our universe. And encyclopedias and, in fact, entire libraries are filled with volumes of detail about the world in which we live, and we continue to learn more about our planet every day. Brethren, I have a couple of articles that I want to read to you. Brightly colored tarantulas. Translucent glass frogs with skin so thin that you can watch their hearts beat. Blind ants and tiny predatory flowers that lure insects to their death through a murderous fragrance are among the more than 1,200 species that have been discovered in the Amazon over the past 10 years. The South American rainforest, I'm reading just excerpts from this article, which covers an area 1.5 times bigger than the European Union. The Amazon itself is 1.5 times, just the rainforest that's considered the Amazon, 1.5 times the size of the European Union. From 1999 to 2009, the report says that a new species was discovered every 3 days. Over a 10-year period, every 3 days, something new discovered. And they just happened. And we're so smart, and yet we continue to find new stuff every day, every 3 days. This list includes Benny, the first new anaconda species identified since 1936, which is 4 meters, about 12 or 13 feet long, and can eat jaguars. We talked about those things that creep on the earth, and some of us don't like them so much. In our house, Nick's the one that goes and chases those down, although we haven't had any anacondas in our backyard in a while. It talks about a vermicelli tree that grows a tangle of yellow noodle-like tendrils, a tiny blind subterranean catfish, and a bald parrot whose body is so spectacularly colored that scientists are astonished that it was not discovered before. This report clearly shows the incredible diversity of life in the Amazon, said Francisco Ruiz. It also serves as a reminder of how much we still have to learn about this unique region. 10 years, 1,200 new species. A fanged frog, a bright yellow snail, a blue lizard are among the more than 1,060 new species recently found on the Melanesian island of New Guinea. This is an island off the northern coast of Australia. Among the new species discovered basically in the same time frame, between 1998 and 2008, were, and it goes on to say, 218 new kinds of plants, 2 birds, 71 fish, 134 amphibians, 580 invertebrates, 43 reptiles, 12 mammals, including 100 new orchids. This report shows that New Guinea's forests and rivers are among the richest and most biodiverse in the world. Scientists found an average of 2 new species every week from 1998 to 2008. So in South America and halfway around the world off the coast of Australia, they managed to find over 2,000 new species in that 10-year period. There was something else further back here I wanted to read. It says, New Guinea is the largest tropical island on Earth. It contains the third largest tract of rainforest in the world after the Amazon and the Congo. Although New Guinea covers less than 0.5% of the Earth's landmass, it shelters 6 to 8% of the world's species. Over 2/3 of these species are found nowhere else on Earth. And that just happened? And it continues to happen? Because as capable as we are, we're only beginning to uncover what God has done. We should be amazed. Here's another one. I don't know if you're aware of this, but in the year 2000, a bunch of smart people decided to get together and prepare for a decade-long global investigation of the world's oceans called the Census of Marine Life. It says, although inquiring waders, swimmers, fishermen, and sailors have ventured into the ocean for millennia, an estimated 95% of the global ocean remains unexplored. So, we think we're masters of our domain, and we haven't even begun to look below the surfaces of the ocean. It says, discovering new life forms is one of the many benefits of exploring nearly virgin territory. Census explorers consistently found new forms of life, detected species distributed in new places, and found clues to the abundance of marine life. During the first 8 years of our discovery, this is a couple of years old, census investigators have found 5,300 likely new species. So, above the sea and below the sea, thousands and thousands, when we look seriously, of God's creations that we didn't even know existed. It says the census is succeeded by building global partnerships, and its community of more than 2,700 scientists from more than 80 nations grew over the past 2 years, or, you know, in their 10 years, 2,700 scientists. And again, it says, while maps, globes, and satellite views may impart the notion that the global ocean is well known, less than 5% of its waters have been explored. I remember giving a sermon on the 4th of July when we camped out a couple of years ago and said, you know, how incredible is God's creation? Mount Everest is the highest mountain on Earth. And if you sliced it off at the Earth's surface, you could put it in the Marianas Trench, which is the deepest part of the ocean, and when you dropped it all the way to the bottom, there still would be a mile worth of ocean above that. So when we look at a globe and you get a feeling of these trenches and all, recognize that what God has done is truly amazing. It's beyond our ability to comprehend. All of this comes as a gift from our all-knowing and loving Father, brother. God created it. He set up rules to control and maintain it. And He programmed in a plan to perpetuate it. He created them great and small. You might want to do the math yourself, because I did it 3 times to make sure that this worked out, because it was just incredible to me. A human heart beats nearly 38 million times a year. 38 million times, with no batteries included. That translates to 2.6 billion times in an average 70-year lifetime. This muscle doesn't wear out for most of us, and it beats, you know, unattended, 2.6 billion times. Something we have, with that next step, you can be grateful for. Speaking of hearts, a hummingbird heart beats up to 1,200 times per minute. 20 times a second. Faster than you can clap, that little heart beats. And it's the size of a grain of rice. Tell me that that's not amazing. As I've said a few times in this message, mankind has accomplished a great deal over the years, but we haven't even begun to master the handiwork of the Master. Mankind will continue to explore the depths of the seas and the distance of space, and they will continue to discover new and exciting things about God's creation. At the same time, many will continue to support some incoherent explanation of how it all came to be and deny the truth of our Creator. Revelation chapter 4 and verse 10 gives us an idea of at least part of what goes on at God's throne. Revelation chapter 4 and verse 10. It says, "The 24 elders fall down before Him who sits on the throne and worship Him who lives forever and ever and cast their crowns before the throne, saying," and I touched on this verse earlier, "You are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for You created all things, and by Your will they existed and were created." Imagine that power, brethren, that greatness, to will this creation into existence. Brethren, we believe in the one true God who has provided us with an incredible playground on which to live and grow and learn and marvel. Let's be wise stewards with His creation. Let's see His hand in our lives every day. And let's be grateful for the promises He has laid before us that provide for bigger and better and eternity.